You know how some books just stay with you? Sometimes you pick up a book that somebody recommended to you, and you read it, and you just can't get it out of your mind. Hi, this is Larry Slater, Sonoma County's Jazz MD, and most of you are used to hearing me play jazz. But I love literature, too. And David Benioff's City of Thieves is a recent read of mine that has just stayed in my mind. It's a story of Leningrad, the siege of Leningrad during World War II, and it's an amazing story. It's by a young author, and it was published in 2008, and I can't recommend it enough. It's a slice of life that you've never appreciated before. David Benioff's City of Thieves. Want to know what else is happening on the literary scene in Sonoma County? Well, stay tuned for Rosemary Manchester and the Redwood Writers Club, next on KRCB's A Novel Idea.
Good evening and welcome to A Novel Idea. This is Rosemary Manchester, your host. I have two writers in the studio here with me who are active in the local Redwood Writers Club, and we're going to be talking about what the club offers to writers as well as the books that these women have published. My guests are Mary Lynn Archibald and Linda Loveland Reed. Welcome to you both. Let's talk a bit about the Redwood Writers group, and then we'll get into your individual writing and talk about the books that you've written. Could you tell us a bit about the activities of the Redwood Writers and what our listeners might need to know or like to know about what goes on at the with the writers?
Okay. I guess I'm the candidate to start because I'm president of the Redwood Writers. I came to it because I was looking for other folks who were like I in that I was writing, and I was writing alone, and I needed other people to inspire me. And so I found the Redwood Writers. We now have over 143 local writers, and they write everything from biographies to nonfiction, memoir, fiction, poetry. And we meet once a month and have speakers. Mm-hmm. And it's very exciting and very, very active organization.
It is. In the interest of full disclosures, let me tell our listeners that I'm a member of the Redwood Writers. So I've been to these meetings. One of the things that impresses me about the meetings is the mutual encouragement.
Yes.
Among the people who are there. There's an enthusiasm and a feeling of you can do it. Any writer needs encouragement. But to come to these monthly afternoons, they're going to be at the Flamingo Hotel now. Is that right?
Yes, we're moving to the Flamingo Hotel effective mm-hmm. February 21. Mm-hmm. Come for a 2:30 registration. The meeting starts at 3 and we adjourn promptly at 5 o'clock. And we usually have some pretty well-known speaker, author, editor, publisher. And so you might want to stay around and get a book signed.
Mm-hmm. The speakers are an important part. But the people in the room are also a very important component, don't you think, Mary Lynn?
Yes, I think one of the reasons that I joined Redwood Writers, and I've been a member for 3 or 4 years now, I guess, is for the support and collegial atmosphere because, you know, you create in a vacuum when you're writing. You're all by yourself, and you really need to get out and bounce your ideas off other people, and it's very important. The kind of support that you get is wonderful. It's not competitive at all.
That's right.
I think one of the things that we do is we offer our members a place to read publicly. couple of times a month. We have salons where they can come on a private basis, read, hear each other, and join critique groups. Writers are often looking for other writers to form a small group to bounce our ideas off of. And then we had a conference. We had our very first conference last October, and we'll have another one this October on October 30th. In which we spend the whole day with many seminars and keynote speakers.
It was an excellent conference.
Yes.
I was a guest at that conference, and it's one of the best run conference days that I've ever experienced.
Oh,
everything.
I'm glad
was,
to
like,
hear you say that.
Clockwork. The speakers were great. The workshops were very, very good. And I was just so impressed. I know how much work goes into putting on a day like that. And when it seemed to me to run seamlessly, I know the people on the committee always say, oh, but if you only knew. But you made it look easy. And everything about it was so professional and so smooth. And writing is a very, very solitary art. You know, it's really hard to sit in a room by yourself hour after hour and bang away at the computer. And so to be with 140 other people who know what that's like is a great experience. And I know so many, many people who are either writing or thinking about writing or wishing that they could get around to writing. So would you talk a bit about the website so that people will know how to find out about Redwood Writers?
The website is www.redwoodwriters.org. And it contains all of our events. It has a list of all of our published authors. And by the way, you do not have to be a published author to join Redwood Writers. Many people think you do, and that is just untrue. And it has a list of all the officers so that you can get a hold of everyone. And our contests. We have many contests. In fact, we're running a contest right now.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that. Mm-hmm.
We have a poetry contest, and the deadline is March 1, and it is open to the general public. So if you are a poet, please go to the website and please submit your poetry. Mm-hmm. And it's very exciting because the Poet Laureate of Sonoma County, Gwen O'Gara, is one of our three judges.
Uh-huh. There are also classes, workshops that go on a regular basis. Is that something that you'd like to tell us more about?
Many of our members are very talented in as far as teaching goes, and they're more than willing to lead workshops.
And so most of the workshops are open to the public or to members?
Yes, most of our workshops are. We try to do that. The conference was open to the general public. What we want to do is we want to try to be and are and have become the go-to place for writers in our area. Mm-hmm. So to do that, we try to embrace as many writers as we can.
Yes. It must be a very exciting day when one of the writers from the group publishes.
Oh, very.
And I imagine there's a celebration so that everyone can rejoice with the published.
Well, there's a lot of back patting, I think.
But yeah. Something called an author launch. Do you have
yes.
Yes. That's a party for
the anthologies.
Oh, for the anthology. Mm-hmm. Oh, tell us about the, I didn't ask about the anthology.
We do a launch for both. And Mary Lynn, why don't you tell her about the anthology?
Well, I participated in the anthology last year. I was one of the editors, final editors, and I was also in the anthology. There have been four, I think, that we have published, and they're members' writings in all those fields, poetry, essay, memoir, and so on, and short story. It's a very good way, if you haven't been published before, to kind of get your feet wet. And it is judged. You have to pass muster in order to be in the anthology. Mm-hmm. The last two have gotten really good reviews, mm-hmm. and we're very proud of them.
This
last one, we had 48 of our members are in that anthology.
Wonderful.
So we're very proud of it. Mm-hmm. And then the author launch we do every July, in which we have a special meeting, and all of those authors who have become published during the last year, then we sort of have a party.
That's the celebration.
Yes, and that usually takes place at the Cotati, the bookshop in Cotati.
North Light?
North Light,
oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
But they have a wonderful outdoor space.
Don't
and in
they
July, it's great.
Oh, yes.
And so we can seat about, I don't mm-hmm. know, 50 people, I guess.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I love that bookstore.
Yeah, it's great.
Independent bookstores are my favorite thing.
Me too.
Yeah. That's right. We've enjoyed
they've
being
supported
having
us.
And I wanted to mention some names that will be familiar to our listeners. Becca Lawton has been a guest on this show. And, of course, Jordan Rosenfeld previously had a show on KRCB, which Gil Manserg now does, Word by Word Conversation with Writers. So if you thought you didn't know people in Redwood Writers, you'd be surprised. So turn up at a meeting and see a lot of familiar faces.
That's right.
Okay. Do you sometimes feel that everybody has a story?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I think that anybody's life has many stories in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's their desire to share that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will say to me, I don't see how you could possibly write a novel. But they can.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely can.
So people, surprise yourself.
Yeah, and that's the,
very
that's
much.
The kind of thing I like to stress when I teach memoir groups, mm-hmm. because, or when I lecture to people mm-hmm. who are interested in memoir, I feel it's your legacy to the future. I don't have any grandchildren, unfortunately. Still, my writing will be there if somebody wants to look at it, you know, 100 years from now.
That's right.
I hope.
That's right. Let's talk about your writing, Mary Lynn.
Okay.
Your own memoir, which is called Accidental Cowgirl, Six Cows, No Horse, No Clues.
Yes.
What? I mean, the title says it all, doesn't
it? Does.
It
does, yeah.
Now, it's based on your own experience.
Yes.
When you and your new husband bought Twin Creeks Ranch,
yes.
in 1990. And you and Carl had not been together that long when you bought the ranch.
Well, we'd been together about 6 years,
oh,
I guess.
Okay.
But, you know, this was our first foray into looking for something together, which was interesting because, you know, he wanted one thing, I wanted another thing. We both thought we were together on that. As it turned out, you know, were two totally different things that we wanted, but it was all there for us as well. So,
yeah. I often think of that. I think it's Jane Austen who popped into one of her novels the line, "And reader, I married him."
And yes,
that's where a lot of stories begin.
That's right.
Yes. And so I'm not going to tell too much about the plot because readers like to be surprised,
yes.
as we go along. So don't worry, I won't give away
okay.
all the good stories. But there you were in Garberville answering an ad for a ranch.
Yes.
And I loved it that you said, on the way to the ranch, the first thing I noticed was bullet holes. Okay, what about those bullet holes? Were you in hunting country?
Well, as I said, trouble in paradise.
Yes.
It was a beautiful country. It was mountainous. It's on the west side of Trinity County, but it was just a beautiful area and very sparsely populated. Trinity County is home to 3 national parks, so with all the acreage that they have, there isn't much room left for people. So they're all very small communities scattered around, and everybody up there hunts. They hunt deer, they hunt bear, and they hunt pig.
And did that become a problem?
Well, you always want to stay indoors during deer season. Keep a low profile. Yes, it can be a problem.
I've read this book,
yes.
and it's absolutely charming.
It is.
Very,
it's
very witty. Very funny.
Yes.
And
yeah.
just the experiences they have are amazing.
I always admire people who can write about difficult situations and make you laugh about it at the same time that you're thinking, thank God I wasn't there when that happened.
Right.
But, Mary Lynn, I wonder if you'd read a passage to us from your book, Accidental Cowgirl.
I'd be happy to. This is from the introduction. Sort of sets up the whole thing. Simplicity. Lead me to it, you say, from the midst of your overburdened, overscheduled, list-making life. If this is your desire, you are not alone. Not so fast. Before you sink your savings into that country squire lifestyle and all that goes with it, perhaps you should take a cold shower and read this book. We lived that life for 12 years, and let me tell you right up front, the simple life isn't really that simple. And despite my persistent romantic fantasies, I rarely managed to look like I'd just emerged from the pages of an L.L. Bean catalog. Those people never get muddy, and they wear bras in town.
You did have adventures, Mary Lynn.
Yes, we did.
Yes, you did. And you kept what you call your country diary.
Yes.
What a good idea.
I kept a journal for the whole time that I was up there. I haven't been as good about it since I came back to Sonoma County, but I was very happy. I hadn't really thought about writing a book when I was keeping my journal. It just that things were so different from what we were accustomed to and interesting that I thought they were worth putting down. And then I started looking at it when I got back and got over crying about selling the ranch and decided it might make a good book. So
to me, the key word is it was different than I expected.
Oh, exactly.
And I think that's where most good stories start, when the protagonist encounters something totally unexpected. And
yes.
Oftentimes it's adversity. Sometimes it's felicity. But that's the story.
That's the story.
Yes.
And, you know, for a lot of people who are born and raised in the country, it wasn't a big deal.
But wasn't a story.
Oh, I don't know. It seemed like a pretty big deal.
Some of the experiences were.
It was a lot of work.
Oh, my gosh.
And the climate up there is a little more difficult than it is here in Sonoma County.
Yes. Yes. Well, up at 4,000 feet, we had snow a lot of times, and we were at between 2,600 and 3,000 feet. So we got snowed on now and then. We got snowed on the first winter. We got snowed in the first winter and almost didn't make it back for Christmas. So that was interesting because we had to dig out a quarter of a mile of driveway.
Oh, my. That's a lot of driveway to dig.
Yeah, and I found out later that's a really good way to have a heart attack when you're not in shape.
Well, I'm glad you skipped that part.
Yeah, me too.
Right. You and I have an experience in common that I was so interested to read your take on it. We have both taught in two-room schoolhouses.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I taught in a little school out in Kansas.
Oh.
And so when I saw that you had the same experience, isn't it wonderful? I mean, to be that intimate with the children.
Well, I guess in the old days it was.
Well, in the old days it was.
Yeah, well, the problems nowadays are, you know, keeping the kids in their seats and keeping them reading their books.
Yes.
And, you know, trying to keep them on task. Uh-huh. Because a lot of kids are really scattered from, I think, I blame Sesame Street, but I probably will take flack for that.
Like things are quite different. I'm trying to think, you know, it was a long time ago that I did this, and the experience is probably completely different. But the personal relationship that you develop with the children is so precious.
Yes, it is, until they threaten to find you and take their revenge.
Now
little ones were sweet.
Yeah, you've done many, many things besides teach school and have a ranch. You were at one point in your career, you were a chorus girl?
Oh, yes. Yes. For two or three years, I danced in a chorus line that used to practice in the old El Patio Ballroom in San Francisco, which became the Fillmore West. In its later life. And we did a lot of shows around the country.
Have you written about that?
Yes, I'm writing about it now.
Oh, good.
I'm actually writing about my early life and then my San Francisco years.
Oh.
Yeah, Carl calls it From Ozzy and Harriet to Sex in the City, but that's a little bit exaggerated.
Sounds like he'd be a good director of marketing.
Oh, yes. He would be, actually.
Then also, you're an interior designer.
I was for about 5 years. It was more like 15 years. How quickly we forget.
Yeah. And maybe there are other things you've done that I missed.
I taught high school for almost 15 years, art and English. I was a model in San Francisco for a memorable about year and a half.
Oh.
Didn't make much money, but it was interesting.
And you have stories.
Yes, and I'm writing about that now, too.
Excellent. You have another book called Briar Hopper.
Yes.
Now, I haven't read Briar Hopper. I'd love to hear a bit about it.
Well, actually, it's pronounced in Kentucky, Briar Hopper.
Okay, I'll practice.
And my mother was born and raised in Kentucky, in southeastern Kentucky, in the poorest part of the coal country, and moved out during the Depression and went to Florida, Texas, and then to California. But her young life was spent back in the hills and hollers. And when she was in her 80s, I said, you know, Mom, we really ought to write about your life, because she was always telling these stories. You know, she told them forever, and I knew I wouldn't remember them, and yet I also didn't want to hear them forever. And so I thought, well, if I write about them, then she won't tell them anymore. Well, that wasn't the case.
No, it doesn't work that way.
But she did have some really good stories, and so we turned that into Briar Hopper.
Oh.
And a briar hopper is someone who doesn't have any shoes in Kentucky. So that's what that means.
Now, your book, Accidental Cowgirl, is on the shelf at Copperfields.
Yes.
Is Briar Hopper available?
Yes, it is. It's available at the Montgomery Village Copperfields. Ah. I probably will put it in the Healdsburg Copperfields as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're listening to Mary Lynn Archibald talking about her writing. Her books are Accidental Cowgirl and Briar Hopper.
Yes.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah. And I think of it as a genre, the books about going off into the wilderness and having adventures that you never dreamed of. I was thinking about other books that have a similar thing. I was recently reading a book by Osa Johnson called I Married Adventure.
Oh, I remember
it
that.
It was recently featured as one of the five best travel or adventure stories of the last century or something.
Yeah, that's
and
an
I
old
have
one.
A copy of it, but I hadn't thought about it for years. And you do see similarities and also differences in that case. It was not a decision that the two of them made. I mean, she met him when he was already involved. It was a case of reader, I married him. And I think perhaps that's a sign of the passing times, that women of that generation weren't as free to design their own adventuresome career. And many of them lived vicariously by joining their spouses in that sort of life.
Yes. I'm reminded of two books.
Oh, tell me.
One that I reread recently and just thoroughly enjoyed, The Egg and I.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's a delight.
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful book. And, of course, she followed her husband to this remote part of Washington State to have a chicken ranch, of all things. She was not at all excited about it for many reasons that were appropriate.
Right.
But it's a hilarious story. And the other one that I read, which isn't so funny but just interesting, is called A Bride Goes West.
Uh-huh.
And it's a sort of a diary of a woman who came from the East, married a man back East, and he took her to Montana to ranch, and that was quite a little culture shock for her.
I love those stories. A book has come back into print that I remember reading years and years ago called Mrs. Mike, about a young woman who married a Canadian Mountie.
Oh, my.
And it's such a good story. And a book that you might not know about, and I want our listeners to know about it. The author is Sharon Butala, B-U-T-A-L-A. She's Canadian, and her first book is called Perfection of the Morning, A Woman's Awakening in Nature. Sharon Butala was a journalist in Toronto, Montreal, in the city, and she fell in love with, I think his name is Peter Butala, who had this wonderful ranch that had been in the family for generations, and she lives there now. It's actually the site of the Wallace Stegner homestead, just on the border of Canada and the United States.
Oh, for
so
heaven's
she
sake.
Is now the caretaker of the property that's the Stegner Reserve up there, and she's written also about Stegner, and written very beautifully herself about this same territory. I think you could probably find it online. I don't know if the bookstores are carrying it. The Canadian authors don't always get across the border unless they're called Margaret Atwood.
Right.
But there are wonderful Canadian writers that we all should be knowing more about.
That sounds like something I'd like to read.
Yeah. You're listening to A Novel Idea. This is your host, Rosemary Manchester. I've been talking with Mary Lynn Archibald about her book, Accidental Cowgirl, Six Cows, No Horse, No Clues, a hilarious account of her years on the ranch. And also with us is Linda Loveland Reed, and we're going to talk with her next about her novel, which is called A Touch of Magenta. But let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open spaces that I love. Don't fence me in. I want to be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in, just turn me loose and let me wander over yonder where the purple mountains rise. On my cayuse and let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. I want to ride to the range where the west commences. Howl at the moon till I lose my senses. I won't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
You're listening to A Novel Idea on KRCB, community-powered radio in the North Bay. We're going to return to Rosemary Manchester and her guests in just a moment, but we want to launch a new segment today. Stephanie Friel, author, editor, and now Healdsburg's literary laureate, delivers flash book reviews.
Recommended reading for Small Peeps by Stephanie Friel. A Visitor for Bear by Bonnie Becker is a delightful book preschoolers will love for years. Bear is reclusive and grumpy, but the mouse's silly ploys for friendship are persistent. The sneaky mouse's humor causes even the youngest readers to giggle. A Visitor for Bear includes lovely watercolor illustrations and wonderful examples of sweet, polite dialogue. The book explores the themes of loneliness and the risk it takes to make a friend. Later, a lesson is learned. Friends are necessary and to be cherished. 5 stars. Recommended reading for Big Peeps. There is something etched, something rough, something raw about Benjamin Percy's stories. But in his collection, Refresh, Refresh, nothing is unfinished or unturned. There are no weak stories. However, my favorites are The Apocalyptic Meltdown, where the entire state of Oregon is closed off due to a nuclear disaster, and the title story, Refresh, Refresh, about small-town boys waiting and surviving while their fathers fight in Iraq. I hope to see his characters and setting again. Benjamin Percy's writing is worthy and powerful.
You're listening to A Novel Idea. We're focused on two guests, both of whom are very active in the Redwood Writers Club. You've been listening to Mary Lynn Archibald talk about her book, Accidental Cowgirl, and now we turn to Linda Loveland Reed, who has published a novel called A Touch of Magenta. Now, Linda, I happen to know you're also a visual artist, so the fact that the word magenta is in the title sounds to me as though that wasn't just an accident.
Yes, to me, the color magenta is an exciting color. It's about passion. Mm-hmm. And I think that the book is about passion.
Yes.
And the passion that we have for life, mm-hmm. and the passion that we have for one another and for family.
I definitely felt that way about the book, too, that it was a book about passion and the consequences of passion.
I think that the book is a lot about morality.
Yes.
And the story offers, I think, some strong metaphors for understanding the complexity of integrity. Because we watch two women, they make decisions, they live with those decisions. Those decisions are made with heartfelt sincerity. But that doesn't always make everything that we do right. We live, we experience life, we get married, we sometimes get divorced, we have kids and kids. We come up with a whole set of notions about how broad we're going to see life.
Yes.
Or how narrow.
Yes.
And then we have to live with all of
that.
That's
right. We do the best we can.
We do indeed.
And it hardly ever turns out the way we thought it might.
Surprising.
Right? And you have parallel stories, one in the present with your protagonist named Corey, and one in the past with your protagonist named Peggy. And we know that there will be a connection between the two of them, but part of the fascination of the book is finding out how these two women are connected and how their lives intertwine.
Yes, we begin with Corey,
yes,
who in 1971 goes to Sonora in the gold country here in California, and it's for her mother's funeral. And at that point, through the will, a mystery begins.
Yes.
And we follow her for 7 days as she tries to put together what is going on with her life. We also then follow Peggy, who in 1895, an Irish girl from the minefield family, falls in love with Chan Lee.
Yes.
So the consequences of that passion throws her into a life in which she must be vigilant to protect and keep secret information that can protect her daughter.
Mm-hmm. It was not permitted. It was unseemly thought of as unseemly in those days for an young Irish woman to fall in love with a Chinese man.
Yes, it was not a time when that was embraced. It was just following the gold rush. Many of the Chinese had worked in the mines, especially in the mines when they were playing out. They'd also built fences. They had built the railroads. But after that, when the country went through one of its first major depressions, they were not welcome in the labor force.
That's right.
And basically, that's where our Chinatowns came from.
And they were not allowed to bring their families. Only the men were allowed into the country to work.
Yeah, what happened is the Chinese exclusion came in so that there was one point where many of them went home and then were not able to come back. So, yeah, there were a lot of restraints.
It was very close to slavery.
Yes, and the Chan Lee, who comes out of San Francisco to Sacramento and meets Peggy, he's doing that as on business. His family is making shoes, and they have an outlet in the Sacramento Chinatown. Sacramento had a very large Chinatown.
Linda, I wonder if you'd read something from us from your book, A Touch of Magenta.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to read you about Peggy when you first meet her in the book. This is Sacramento, 1896. Peggy clutched her cloak, holding it against the gust as rain streaked her face. She darted closer to the inside edge of the wooden sidewalk. With one hand gripping a flimsy umbrella, she tried anxiously to tuck back locks of her hair whipped from her bonnet, red hair clearly betraying her Irish descent. Sacramento's Chinatown was second in size to San Francisco and just as shabby. As in every gold rush town in the Sierras, the Chinese community lived apart from white citizens. Both factions preferred it that way. The bottom of Peggy's skirt collected the puddles full to soaking in the slippery wooden walk made each step a risk. Barely able to see through the driving rain, Peggy bent her head against the storm and forged on, peering squint-eyed through the dirty windows of each shop. A jumble of dead chickens and odd, once-alive critters swung from the ceilings. Shelves sagged under the weight of strange-looking implements, so unlike her parents' store tidbits where her mother insisted all be orderly and clean. Peggy doubted whether the mostly male patrons noticed. Dusty and rough, always in a hurry, the men taunted and flirted with Peggy. "They won't bite ya," her father joked, slurring his words with a bit much drink. Peggy knew differently.
You must have done a ton of research.
I did, and it was fun. Uh-huh. And so I really enjoyed that very much, doing the research.
How did you chiefly do it? Did you go to Sacramento? Or?
Well, of course, I did that, and I went to Sonora and visited that whole area. It also takes place in Singapore.
That's right. I want to ask about that.
Yes. And I've been to England many times. So I did interview a plastic surgeon doctor here in town who knew about the history of plastic surgery, and I studied the San Francisco earthquake. I went to a big hotel in San Francisco. It was really fun to do that. I enjoyed all of that. I especially, well, not especially, because each one of them were a different piece of history. But when she was in New York, for instance, and visiting, and went to stay with the cab driver's family, all of that, taking the train, going across country.
Then it's a story, too, about a lost child. Lost, I put that in quotation marks, because, of course, the child is lost to Pagin. But then one follows the story through the whole book to see if they will be reunited. Yeah, and that's a passionate and powerful story.
Well, it's interesting where stories come from. When I began to write, actually, I didn't think I would do that, because it seemed such a solitary kind of thing. And I direct theater, and I paint, and I do other things that somehow or another, being just myself in the computer for hours and hours at a time was a little ominous to me. But what I did discover is that you're not alone. You're there with your characters. And it was quite exciting. So I developed the story and came up with the story when we were visiting Sonora, and it kind of grew from there.
Yes. And when you're writing, you're creating. You're creating a world and creating people to place in that world. And then some of the time your creators lead you through the story, and some of the time you lead them.
Yes.
And was it a case of both of that when you were writing this?
Well, it was very interesting. I do believe that every writer has themselves somewhere in everything they write.
Yes.
I was not so aware of it. And we were at a writer's group, and someone said to me, "Is this biographical?" And I didn't answer for a minute. I was stunned. And my husband said, "Yes." So then I was really stunned. And then, of course, I realized that when I was 2, something happened to me. And it was that my mother took me somewhere and didn't come back. And I'm not sure about the story. I think being sure about the story is definitely part of the book to me, because not knowing something like that. And you know, my glass was half full. Many people who have that experience don't have a half full glass.
Right.
But my father remarried a wonderful woman. I had a wonderful mother all of my life, and wonderful brothers and sisters that I wouldn't have had if I had that happen to me. But the stories were so different. You know, one person would say to me, "Well, your mother took you to a children's home with a note." And another one said, "Oh, no, my father said, what happened is your mother brought, I was in the war and I was gone, and your mother brought you to your grandmother's and then never came back." My grandmother said, "No, actually what happened was we went and got you. You were left at home. You were alone and you were only 2. We went and got you." And then my father's best friend, when my dad died about 2 years ago, called me and he said, "I just want to tell you what really happened. Your mother brought you over to my house and then she did not return." So, and my aunt, of course, has another story. So I don't know. And I think that somehow or another, these things do inform your life. I had a good life. I had a good mother. I have wonderful brothers and sisters I'm very close to. But still, there is that little part of you that is always floating around.
And the way you've been able to use that part of you in illuminating this novel that you've written is astonishing. And knowing that, what you've just said, you know, now I want to go back and read the book again and see how you used your knowledge of what that feels like throughout the whole story.
There's certain characters in the book that I bring forward and certain characters that I don't. And it's interesting because people have asked me about that. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, I'm asking myself about it. Mm-hmm. And what I really find is the characters that I've not brought forward, I have those reasons. In that if something's not clear to you, then you probably won't make it really clear in your book.
Uh-huh.
Well, the plot was very well done and interesting to me, that it held your interest throughout.
Yes.
And I was able to, even though I've never been to, well, I have been to Singapore, but not in those days. And I could picture that. And also I could picture, of course, being up in the Sierras. I've been to Sonora. But I had a whole different feeling about it after reading your book, and it's kind of deepened the whole experience for me.
Great.
Well, perhaps you'd think about writing a parallel story and featuring some of the characters that you didn't bring forward in this one. You know, Marilyn Robinson did such a beautiful job of that after she wrote Gilead, to write home about the other family. I mean, I thought that was such a tour de force. Mm. And you have enough interesting characters in this to, you know, do the whole story from another point of view.
It's certainly been suggested to me.
Should you choose to do so? Yes.
I'm thinking it over.
Yeah, but you probably have many other things that you you want to develop as well.
Well, you know, I have started a new novel.
Excellent.
And I'm having a very nice time with it. But it's nice to stop sometimes and write short stories, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
Marianne?
Yeah.
It's just nice to take a break. You know, mm-hmm. a novel is a long journey, and it's nice to just break away. The thing about short stories is your writing style can be different. You can experiment. You can try
True.
Something a little bit more modern or abstract or something very different maybe from what you do when you're doing a novel. And so it's been fun to do that too, and I've really enjoyed it.
And for those of us who are compulsive readers, it's lovely to turn to short stories
yes.
and kind of take a break from the longer fiction. And it seems to me like a phenomenon that I've seen just recently, the books of linked stories. They're not quite a novel, but the same characters might be featured throughout, or there's there's something that ties the stories together. And I think that's just a marvelous way to tell a story.
I really do. I've been really toying with that a lot lately.
Oh, good.
I think that it's just energizing
yes.
to think that you could write these small pieces and that they could all fit together.
Yes.
And then they could be memoir. They can
That's
be,
right.
I think, a memoir that just sort of lets you know that person by pointing up a few really important incidences in their life
yes.
is a wonderful
yes.
way to
yes.
approach
yes.
your life.
And the two of you have done so many things. I mean, your careers are eclectic, and there are so many stories that you could tell from your own experience about different times in your life, different things you've done. You're both artists. You're visual artists. Linda, you're a theater director. And besides a very successful businesswoman, I have no idea how you find the time to write.
I don't either.
when I read all the things you've done, and she writes too. And I know that takes a tremendous discipline.
It does. I think that in terms of getting a lot done, there are so many people out there, and I know, Rosemary, that you're one of them, Mary Lynn, that you fill your day with many different kinds mm-hmm. of things. You accomplish many different kinds of things. And it really is just a desire. I have people say to me, I could never paint. And I said, yes, you can. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You can. Mm-hmm. It's simply the desire to do it.
Yes.
Everybody has that just right there inside of them, just waiting to happen.
Yes.
I truly believe that.
I say the same thing to people who say I could never write. I said, try it.
That's right.
Just try it.
That's right. Try. Just do a page.
Surprise yourself. Yeah. The creative bit is in everyone. And it's just giving yourself the opportunity to express that creativity without being self-conscious, without critiquing yourself to death. Just do it.
Absolutely. And that is really a technique for people who haven't written, or even for those of us who have, and we want to write something and it's just not coming, to just let it go, sit down and let it go. And by the time you get about halfway through, something's going to happen. And,
that's right.
You know, it's exciting.
Yeah, it is. You're listening to A Novel Idea. This is your host, Rosemary Manchester, and I'm speaking with two writers, Mary Lynn Archibald, the author of Accidental Cowgirl, and Linda Loveland Reed, whose book is called A Touch of Magenta. They are both very active in the Redwood Writers Club. And Linda, in the copy of A Touch of Magenta, I found a guide for book clubs. Both of these books would be excellent for book clubs. And your questions are so good that I want to ask the two of you a couple of Linda's questions.
Okay.
I thought these were just great. First of all, what does truth mean within families? Now, that's a great question,
isn't
it?
That is a great question. You know, truth is relative, unfortunately, or fortunately, as Linda was pointing out in her last example. In memoir, we have to be as faithful to the truth as we can be, but my truth is different from my son's truth or my husband's truth or my neighbor's truth, although we may all have lived through the same situation. So in families, I think the best you can hope for is to arrive at some kind of a consensus because everyone's truth is so different. And my children tell me about things that happened 20 years ago that I said or did, and I can't even remember them now. So,
but essentially, don't you write your own truth?
Yes.
This is it.
Always,
as I saw
it's
it.
Your own
this
truth.
Is
yeah.
My memory of this is my
and,
truth.
And yeah. It's fallible. You
yes.
know, you have to know that, but
that's
you have
right.
to also, you have to also have the commitment to be as close to your truth as you can.
That's
not
right.
pull punches.
And as Lynn Fried says, one must be fearless.
Yes. Yes.
Plunge ahead.
Yeah. I think that families, families find a myth and
yes.
of who their family, what kind of people are we? Are we from the earth? Are we professionals? Are we, you know, there's just so many things. And I think the other thing is there's a lot of truth in forgiveness within families, and things happen. And but basically, are they good people? Have they been good people? Were your parents good people? They made mistakes, and those are so many different kinds of truths.
Yes, and that comes with maturity, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
We didn't know that when we were just youngsters.
We did not.
Yeah, and I think that those of us who have a few years on us have an advantage in writing. Because not only do we have more material because we've lived longer, but we have a longer view. I was thinking of your experience of your mother disappearing and all the different ways in which that story was presented to you. And I wondered if that's what prompted this question, where is truth within a family? Because you'll probably never know the facts.
Yeah.
But the truth is
but the truth is
you were
that
cared for.
I was cared for
you were
and
loved.
I was loved.
Yes.
Absolutely. And
yes.
that is the basic truth.
Yeah.
So if we have to find what's real and
yes.
and what you know not to get hung up on.
And there's a lot of things we have to let go.
Absolutely.
Because either they don't matter or they're irrelevant because we've forgiven that. We've moved on. Yeah.
Yes, I've had so many people come to me after reading the book and say things I hadn't expected that I didn't know it would bring to the surface. Mm-hmm. They might tell me that they were adopted, or they might tell me they gave a child away, or they might mm-hmm. tell me that they never knew their father. Mm-hmm. Or it's people. There are many, many people out there that have these experiences,
right.
and they have informed their lives over a period of time mm-hmm. in certain ways in regards to that.
And by writing your story, you release something in your readers so that they can face or deal with or think about or whatever they want to do with that experience. And they can also come to you and say, I had a similar experience. And then there's a bond between you and your readers that's just amazing.
Yes, it's
this probably it's happens
nice.
To both of you all the time.
Well, it's you know, I'm reminded of, I just finished reading Mary Carr's book, The Liar's Club, which is
fabulous.
A memoir of her
right.
very difficult childhood.
Yeah.
And she was saying in the introduction that she was eating lunch one day in a restaurant in New York City, and she heard this woman at the next table talking about this fabulous book that she had read and how it had changed her life. And so she introduced herself, and the woman said, oh, my God, you're my heroine. Anyhow, it turned out that her book is used a lot by therapists for
yes.
people who have been through similar experiences. Yeah. And I thought, well, you know, there's a real use for a truth that's difficult mm-hmm. to describe.
Yes. And also that's every writer's dream.
Oh, yes. Yes. For sure.
I know they're all part of you. You need them by your side. The ladies still think of you. In the circle of your arms is where they'd like to be again. And you just go round and round in your circle of friends. Ah, yes, your circle of friends. You know, there's always one or two good friends around, like a back door to go to in every always
back door to go to in every
You've been listening to A Novel Idea. This is your host, Rosemary Manchester. My guests are Mary Lynn Archibald, whose book is Accidental Cowgirl, and Linda Loveland Reed, whose book is A Touch of Magenta. They're both very active in the local Redwood Writers Club. Linda is the current president of the club, and Mary Lynn is a very, very active volunteer in the club. And you can find more about the Redwood Writers Club on their website, redwoodwriters.org. Or you can just Google Redwood Writers.
And it
comes up.
And there we are.
Thank you both so much for being here. It was such a pleasure to talk with you about your work and to share some of the high and low points of writing your stories.
Oh, thank you.
It's just been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Yes. And usually when I close, I use the little byline, "There's no such thing as too many books." I came across one of the origins. I'm sure that many, many people have used that expression. But I want to read this to you, and then I'm going to ask you to guess who wrote it. "Just as the captain must have a well-equipped chart room, so the student and thinker must have a well-equipped library and must know his way about that library. I, for one, never can have too many books, nor can my books cover too many subjects. I may never read them all, but they are always there, and I never know what strange coast I am going to pick up at any time in sailing through the world of knowledge."
Oh, that's beautiful.
Who do you suppose said that?
I have no idea.
Jack London.
Oh, really?
Jack London in 1913. Isn't that wonderful?
That's great.
And so Jack London and I say, there's no such thing as too many books.